We're doing the Sefer HaMidot, and we're still in the introduction. The Magen Midovna had begun by quoting from Rabbi Yochanan that around the ark, around the Aron, it says there was a zer, a crown, and the word zer can also be read as zar, estranged. And so Rabbi Yochanan said that the Torah can either be zar, estranged from a person, or zer, a crown to a person. And the Magen Midovna had explained it based on another medrash, that the medrash said that a person toils all day and he's not tired. Then he comes to learn Torah or pray and he's tired. He doesn't have koach. He's worn down. So Hashem says, I wish I would have never known you. What's going on here? What does that mean, I wish I would have never known you? So the Magen Midovna explained that when Bilaam came to curse the Jewish people, Hashem says, You're belittling what I chose. I didn't happen upon the Jewish people. I chose them. Why did Hashem choose us? Because their heretz, kadma la Torah, before Torah comes their heretz, good traits. And we are supposed to be people that will intrinsically have good traits. And from there comes the choice, okay, they are the ones that should carry the yoke of Torah. As we know, there are three traits that are the hallmarks of the Jews, and they are rachmanim, merciful, baishanim, hefshem, gomlei chasadim. They do acts of kindness. So, if we have those traits, that's the precept to having Torah. So when our sages said, if a person has these good traits, then zer, then the Torah is a crowning upon these traits. But if a person has bad traits, so then the Torah is estranged from him. Great, he has the crown of Torah, but the rest of his garments don't fit. It's like a person wearing a crown, but all his garments are that of a pauper. So it looks funny, what's going on here? And so the commentaries say that Ratza Kadosh Baruch Hu Zakot et Israel, right? The Mishnah says Hashem gave us Torah and mitzvot as a merit. And what it means is that there are many mitzvot in the Torah that we would have done on our own. I haven't seen people eating spiders lately. You haven't seen it? I haven't seen people catching, hitting a mosquito and then saying, yum, let's have some of that. Yet there's a mitzvah not to eat mosquitoes. Why did Hashem give us those mitzvot? So we have another rule, and that is that where we don't have a commandment, we don't have a Yetzer Hara, or at least it's not as strong. The second, what?
You can switch off this killing machine. It makes the people sick.
The second we have, so that goes back to the Medrash, that you, whatever you do, you're not tired. But the second you have a commandment, you have a mitzvah to do something, then it's difficult. Suddenly I'm tired. And we've experienced it. I gave the example of Shlomo and Doeg. When someone tells you what to do, it becomes difficult. Right now, no one has a urge to leave the classroom. But if I said, please, no one leave for 5 minutes. Do me a favor. Don't leave the room for 5 minutes. Suddenly, you feel oppressed. You want to leave. And when the Torah gives us a commandment, it makes it a little bit more difficult. That's what our sages said. All day you're not tired. You could do whatever you want. But when suddenly you have a mitzvah, you have Torah, you have prayer, it becomes difficult. We're continuing on the top of page Lamed Chet. Based on what we've just laid out before us, so when Rabbi Hananiah ben Akashia said, Hashem wanted to give us wages, so He gave us so many mitzvot, that's also with regards to the traits. It's not only with regards to don't eat a mosquito. Gam amidot ha'ila kadosh baruch hu birtzono lezakot otanu, shenkabel sachar gam aleihem. So Hashem took these traits, which should have been ingrained and natural to us, that, and Hashem gave us a mitzvah to adhere to these traits. And now suddenly we'll get wages for adhering to these traits. And suddenly it becomes more difficult to adhere to these traits. That's why the Torah commands us, go in Hashem's footsteps. Suddenly Hashem's commanding me to be merciful. It's a little bit more difficult. I have a mitzvah to give tzedakah. It's a little bit more difficult. If we wouldn't have had a commandment to do it, and this is what many Geirim find and many Chozrim B'Tshuva find, I was a very good person before I knew I had to be. When suddenly the Torah tells me I have to, then it becomes more difficult. I was able to give much more charity when I didn't feel it incumbent upon me. People say I davened so well before I did my gear. But then once I converted, now suddenly it's difficult to daven. Why? Because now that's exactly the point. When I realize I'm responsible to it, then it becomes difficult. Part of our laissez-faire system, which is laissez-faire not only in the economy, but also in our morals. The world says, live and let live. Anything goes. Really? Anything goes? What's your business, what I do at home? Maybe it is my business. Maybe there's a moral system that we all have to adhere to. And maybe there are things that should bother me. If you knew your neighbor was beating his wife, you wouldn't say, what's it my business? You know, he's beating his wife. It's not my wife. It's his problem. Right? There are things that bother your conscience. And if it's not your neighbor, and if it's the guy down at the other end of town, and if it's the guy in the next town, at some point, you're still bothered. You're bothered by what's going on now in Syria, I think. It bothers me. It does bother me. Children are being killed. It bothers me. People are being tortured. I can't root for either side. You know, they're both evil. Who am I supposed to root for? But it bothers me. That's good. But then comes the Torah and says, you have a mitzvah. You're commanded to care. Now it's becoming difficult to care. Now I'm being told what to do. So the Magen Midvarnei says it's not only with regards to the commandments, like not eating a mosquito. And if the Torah would not have given us a commandment, there would have been a certain benefit, because then we would have maintained that level more easily. When no one tells me what to do, I can do it. And then it's easier for me to do it. And it would have been natural, as though it were innate, from the time we were born. We wouldn't have had a desire to go the other way. If the Torah wouldn't have commanded us to do so, then many of the traits would have been easier on us. But that's not the way it is now. Then the Yetzer can even attack the things that we think should be so simple, so obvious. We should care. And now our sages said so aptly, Amara Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Alvai lo ikerticha. It's as though Hashem says, I wish I would have never known you. What does that mean? There was once a teacher in the city, and the one of the philanthropists used to constantly give that teacher gifts. When a holiday would come, say he would give him a gift. If Purim would come, he'd send him this big fancy mishloach manot. Anytime there was an occasion, he would send him a gift. The way he ran his home, whenever possible, he'd give the teacher gifts. Okay, time passed. And the teacher's daughter reached a marriageable age. So he calls the Shadchan and he tells him, you remember that philanthropist? He has a son. I have a daughter. Maybe they match. So they make it up. They get married. Great. So the teacher's daughter, the philanthropist's son, they're married. And the teacher was so happy, he said, he says, now we're family. If beforehand he used to send me gifts, certainly now that we're family, he'll send me gifts. But what happened was the exact opposite. The couple didn't stop fighting. There was great enmity between the two. Adkim gam hamchutanim yusanim dolim zetzet. Reached a point where the parents made the pivotal mistake of getting involved. And before you knew it, the teacher and the philanthropist were arch enemies. And so it reached a point, it's Purim, and every year Purim, the teacher was accustomed to getting this huge mishloach manos from the philanthropist, and he gets nothing. So he says, I wish I would have never had my daughter marry him. And then at least we would have had that relationship we had before. But now I know he hates me. Even on Purim, he's not sending me mishloach manos. So that's the mashal, the Magen Midvarnei writes, hanimshal. But what it's alluding to is HaKadosh Baruch Hu Kivichol Kovel V'Omer. Hashem says, he's complaining, V'loti karata Yaakov, Klomav, Chilo Yisakti Mimcha Yekau Gdula Lidei Midot Tavot Shiyubcha B'yotcham Madrigat Yaakov. He says, back when you were on the lowest rung, before I elevated you, then you were a good person. V'ata achar she'alita Yidei Matan Torah L'vchinat Yisrael, but now I've uplifted you, you're no longer Yaakov. You get the title Yisrael. Hinei Yagata B'Yisrael, you've worn me down. I've given you so many mitzvos, and it backfired, so to speak. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Alvai lo ikartich Yaakov. Hashem says, I wish I would have never known you. Ki ulai haya yoter tov im yo hamudot ha'ele bilti klulim b'torah. Maybe it would have been better if I wouldn't have commanded you to be merciful. Would have been easier for you to be merciful. Maybe it would have been better if I wouldn't have told you. And you'll see this when your parents bezrat Hashem. There are two ways you can get your kids to clean up the room. You could come in and say, guys, I want you to clean up the room. And they'll ignore you. And you'll come in a second time. And they'll ignore you. They're good kids just like you were a good kid. And they'll ignore you just like you ignored your parents. And that's normal. And you'll come in and you'll say, I'm coming back in 5 minutes and the room better be clean. And they'll ignore you. Because they're normal. But then you could try something else. You could come and say, what do you say you make a surprise for Ima? Let's see if in 5 minutes we can make a surprise. And when Ima will come, she'll be so surprised. Your room is so organized. What just happened? I didn't ask them to do something. I suggested something which they can feel like they're voluntarily doing. If I'm telling them what to do, so they'll ignore me. Ah, you have to try and overcome that. You want to be listened to. Okay, that's a big challenge in education, especially with kids and especially if you're a warm, caring, loving parent. So it's a balancing act, and you'll still be ignored many of the time. Much of the time, but if you can ask them, what do you say we do a surprise? If you wake up Shabbos morning and say, kids, I want to see the table set by the time your mother comes out, you've said one thing, and it might not happen. But if you say, your mother's going to be so happy if you surprise her, and by the time she comes out, the table's set, you've left it to their free will, you haven't commanded them what to do, boom, you'll see. You'll have a much higher percentage rate of accomplishment. They're going to do
it. So you raise your kids with Judaism, do you make it not obligatory?
It's complicated. I can tell you that many of the kids have challenged Judaism. The girls reach an age where they understand that tzniut is important to you. So if they're upset at you, they'll ask for another drink and you'll say no. So at some point where they're about 5, 6 years old, they might get undressed at the table. Like, how can I fight you back? Okay, I'm taking off. So if you're with it, then what you might do is laugh like you just did and say, what I say is stay like that. And I'm sorry you're going to be embarrassed, but you want to be like that? That's fine. Stay like that. Because they're trying to challenge you with, I'm going to challenge your observance level, and that's how I'm going to fight you. The boys will reach an age, it could be 3, it could be 4, it could be 5, where they're upset, you didn't give them what they want, they take the yarmulke and they throw it on the table or on the floor. So again, I say the same thing. I say, leave it off. You want it off? Fine, leave it off. But then I add something. I say, but when your neshama goes up tonight to Shemaim, and their bon shalom asks you why you sat without a yarmulke, don't blame me. It's your choice. You want it off? Leave it off. But you answer for yourself. Don't bring me into the conversation tonight. Tonight, when you go to sleep, your neshama's going up to Shemaim. Their bon shalom will ask why you sat at the table without a yarmulke. Your business. But you want it off? Leave it off. Depending on the kid, there have been times where I've told the kid, don't put it back on. Don't. Leave it off. When the kid used that tool too many times, so it reaches a point where I say, do me a favor, the rest of the meal, you'll be without a yarmulke. You're obviously not old enough. Leave it off. It's fine. You obviously don't need to wear a yarmulke yet. I can tell you that none of the kids have left the yarmulke off more than once, twice, saying they... When you tell them, I think that's, if you're bringing that up, that's the main thrust of Chovat HaTalmidim. The Rebbe of Piasechna wrote a book called Chovat HaTalmidim, and his main point in Chinuch, if we can encapsulize the whole book, his main point is you have to give children the freedom and the feeling that their observance is up to them. It's their life. And that's very difficult because you really do care if they're more observant or less observant. But in order to succeed, they have to feel like the ball's in their hands.
That no one's challenging them.
That they have free will. And it is completely up to them whether they will succeed or not. You guys want me to expand on this for 2 minutes?
Yeah. Sure.
Okay, so I'll tell you the story of the first class I taught. It's a difficult class. I'll make a long story short. Should I make a long story long? Any of you plan on going into education? No, so it's not, I don't have to go into all the details. In a nutshell, I was teaching the first class the first day. I had taught in informal settings, but this was the first time I was teaching in a formal setting. And about 2 hours into the day, one of the kids raises his hands and says, "Rabbi, have you ever taught before?" And the whole class is sitting there in stark silence. And I looked at him and I said, "I have never before taught a word. And I want to tell you, I don't plan on teaching a word now either." So they're all sitting there wondering what I mean. And I said, "Listen, learning is a choice. You will have to decide whether you want to learn. I can't teach you a word. I can learn, and I can make the learning experience exciting, and you can decide whether you'll join or you won't join. It's up to you. I can't teach you. You can decide whether you will want to learn. I can present information here, and you can sit there and zone out and get nothing out of it. That's your choice. No one can force you to learn. At the end of the year, you'll look back and decide, did I want to learn or did I not want to learn? At the end of the day, you could look back, but it will always be your decision, not my decision. I can only try to present the information in an interesting way. You will always have to decide whether you're learning or you're not learning, and whatever you decide you want, it's your choice." At the end of the year, Baruch Hashem, they learned a lot. And at the graduation ceremony, so I when I was asked to speak, I began with this. I said to the parents, the first day, one of the guys asked me if I ever taught, and I said, "I never taught, and I don't intend to teach a word. And I have to say, the whole year has passed, and I've lived up to my end of the deal. I haven't taught a word." But they lived up to their end of the deal. They chose to learn. They learned a lot because they chose to learn. But that's that principle. If I'm responsible for your knowing, so then you're going to work very hard. The same thing happens in marriage. Very often husbands think that the way to run the finances of the house is that I make the money, so I run the bank account. I know exactly what goes in and what goes out. And what ends up happening is the exact opposite. They end up setting up a system where the feeling in the house is you're supposed to make the money, I'm supposed to spend the money. And the wife will live up to her end of the deal. If that's the feeling, I said, fine, I can spend the money. And then you'll come and say, you know, we're not making ends meet, we have to cut costs. So what will your wife answer you? Maybe you have to be more careful to shut the light when you leave the room. And what don't you want me to pay? You want me not to pay her? No. You want me not to pay rent? You want me not to pay for the milk? You want me to cut on the groceries? I can buy less bread every day. She will take you to that place where she'll say, you want to cut the expenses here. Here are your expenses. And you won't be able to argue. She'll say, you know, I've been telling you all the time you shouldn't leave the air conditioning on so often. Maybe she's always cold. But she'll take you there. Whereas if you look at the finances together and she has access to the bank accounts and she knows what's there, and then you build a plan together, and if you have excess, you put it in savings or you invest it, but you work out the budget together, then she's a partner. If she's a partner, then she also has to think how we can save. I'm oversimplifying it, but in general, this approach makes a world of a difference. The approach, are we partners? Are we both thinking about it? Or do I say, do it, you know, comply? That doesn't work. It backfires, and it backfires with children too. Obviously, there are scenarios where that you have to draw the line. Obviously, sometimes you have to lay down the law. When my seven-year-old tells me, "Abba, I know how to cross the street, what's the problem?" So sometimes the answer is, you think you know, and I'm your parent, and you're going to listen to me whether you think you agree with me or you don't. Sometimes that has to be the answer. Even though he argues with me all the time, saying, "I know how to cross the street well." He doesn't understand that he doesn't perceive distance well yet. He doesn't understand it, and my explaining to him won't convince him. He doesn't see the difference between him and his 10-year-old brother. So sometimes you have to say no. You don't understand, and you're going to listen, even though you think differently. Sometimes you have to. But where you don't have to, you try to avoid that.